If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking.
Ben Brown came into the public eye in late 2020 when he spoke out against COVID-19 restrictions. And the Washington Republican used that advocacy as a driving force to run and win in a tough GOP primary for a Missouri Senate seat. Brown joins us on the latest episode of Politically Speaking to talk about why he prevailed in the hotly contested 26th district race and what he wants to accomplish in the Missouri Senate. Let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, the definitive show about Missouri politics.
We have to talk about things that matter to people.
I've tried to bring that same aggressive, iconoclast style with me to the United States Senate.
I think my district is a model for the state.
We put Missourians first.
You just kind of have to find the common ground with people.
I believe that this district deserves someone who represents their values.
After I came back to St. Louis, I started thinking that I could have a bigger role on the change that I wanted to make.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, St. Louis Public Radio political correspondent Jason Rosenbaum. Joining me from Jefferson City, she is St. Louis Public Radio's State House and politics reporter,
Sarah Kellogg.
And joining us in studio in St. Louis, he was the winner of the highly competitive 26th District Senate race Republican primary.
Ben Brown, great to be here.
Great to have you. I saw you at an event for Eric Schmidt, and I think that I mentioned that if you won your primary, you were going to get to come on the podcast, which is clearly the reason you ran for the Senate, right?
Oh, yeah, of course. Absolutely.
I think this is an instance where, like, the candidate's biography is especially interesting. So I want you to talk about, like, a little bit about who you are and how you got involved in politics.
Sure. So prior to the COVID-19 pandemic, I'd been involved to an extent, but more at the grassroots level. I was a member of the Franklin County Republican Central Committee. I had been involved with the St. Louis Young Republicans and statewide organization, and was the national committee man for the state of Missouri for the Young Republicans, but had no intention of running for office, certainly nothing this ambitious. I had never even given a public speech 2 years ago, so it was certainly a transformational couple years.
Yeah, and you segued very nicely. Before you announced your run for the 26th District Senate seat, you came to prominence because you were an outspoken opponent of St. Louis County Executive Sam Page's COVID-19 restrictions. Here is actually a clip of you in December 2020 speaking at a press conference for legislation aimed at curbing such regulations.
In order for my restaurant to stay afloat on just takeout and delivery sales, we would have to lay off approximately half of our staff. Now, if you were to scale that out across all the restaurants in the county, that would indicate thousands of people could have potentially already been laid off because of this order. These are mothers and fathers with mortgages and mouths to feed. These are college students living paycheck to paycheck. The damage inflicted by this order is very real. However, the data to support it appears to be non-existent.
So just to provide some context, you're an owner of Satchmo's Bar and Grill in Chesterfield, correct?
Correct.
And how long have you been in the restaurant business for?
I took over the business in 2013.
So kind of explain, like, why you decided to get involved in this anti-COVID-19 restriction advocacy space.
Well, you know, I felt very protective of my industry. The restaurant industry was hit particularly hard, as were all small businesses. And it just seemed and felt wrong what was happening. In the weeks leading up to when they announced they were shutting down restaurants in St. Louis County, the county executive would go out there to the podium and explain that the main driver of new spread was actually small gatherings and homes, not businesses. They would say that his own leader of pandemic task force came out and said that shutting down restaurants at this point would do nothing to slow the spread because it was already too widespread in the community. And then they come out and announce they're shutting down the restaurants anyways. And it seemed to be politically motivated. For all the talk you would hear about following the science, it seemed to be really contradictory to that. And I decided I needed to take a stand. And everyone, I think, has certain pivotal moments in their life they look back upon that kind of set them on a course. And this was one for me. I remember when the announcement was made that they were shutting down the restaurants. It was a few days before it took effect. I started making a lot of noise on social media, reaching out to other restaurant owners saying, hey, this is going to continue as long as we allow it. We need to do something. We need to take a stand.
Did you make that noise like at the beginning of the pandemic, or are you talking more about like late 2020 when the restaurants were shut down again?
So this is in November of 2020.
Right. Because I think that there was consensus in March of 2020 that we don't know a lot about this virus. We need to like be in our houses for a few weeks. I think that was like across the political spectrum, that was the consensus. I think you started seeing a lot of divergence in late 2020, basically. Continue.
Yeah, and that was really the thing. And the fact that none of the surrounding cities or counties, no other city or county in the entire state was following suit with this. So all it was doing is pushing people to travel to restaurants in St. Charles County, Franklin County, other areas like that. And I felt like it was wrong. I made a lot of noise about how I would not be complying. And then the day the order took effect actually came around. And I'll never forget this morning. I was sitting at my kitchen table working on my computer, and I got a text from a reporter from KMOV here in St. Louis asking if we followed through and kept our restaurant open. I said, of course, we're still open. And she then asked me if she could meet me in my dining room to film the dining room full of customers and have me explain my reasons why. So at this point, I'm thinking, oh boy, you know, it's one thing to talk about defying an order. It's another to go on television and say, you know, here I am, come and get me. But then I looked over on the couch and I saw my four-year-old sitting there just, you know, watching television. And it got me thinking. I started thinking about how this is actually a legitimately historic time that we're living through right now. And someday my kids are going to ask me what my role was through all this. Am I going to have to say that, you know, I did what everyone else was doing? I took the easy choice and went along because I didn't know better? Or am I going to be able to say that I took a stand? I made the hard choice and stood up for what I believed was right. Right then and there, I flipped the switch and I knew that, you know, despite whatever consequences came my way, this is the path that I needed to pursue. And I followed it all the way to what ended up leading me to a state Senate run.
You were also involved in a lawsuit that curbed county's abilities to impose COVID-19 related restrictions. Why do you feel it was important for you to get involved in that?
Correct. Yeah. And initially, when they tried shutting down the restaurants, the first lawsuit, I banded together with about 40 other restaurants in the Missouri Restaurant Association. We filed a lawsuit against St. Louis County, seeking a temporary restraining order against the order, but we weren't able to secure that. So we kind of changed strategies and pursued this other case where we filed a suit directly against Missouri's Department of Health and Senior Services, challenging the constitutional authority of them to do any of this in the first place. And it took about a year to get anywhere, but in the end we won, and we saw that it had a pretty substantial effect. And you know, the Attorney General kind of really picked up on it and was actually going around enforcing compliance with all these school districts to eliminate mask mandates. And my hope is that this will prevent any kind of abuse like this in the future.
Well, there was a lot of conjecture that this lawsuit hurt county health department's ability to issue orders unrelated to COVID-19. What's your feeling about that?
Well, I know there were some discrepancies about how that was being interpreted. And so, you know, I'll leave the interpretation of all the details to the legal scholars. But I think the government's primary role, first and foremost, is to defend the rights of the people. And I felt that there was a responsibility here because these powers were being abused, not just in the, you know, I don't need to just make the case that they were being used for political reasons, but in the case of my restaurant, the day of that press conference, the health department showed up just hours later, hours after that speech aired, saying they were suspending our permit, declaring us a hazard to public health. When our attorney reached out asking about this unlawful suspension, the response was that it didn't matter because they would amend the charge mid-hearing till they found something to get us with.
So what is interesting about this is at the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic in Missouri, Governor Mike Parson tended to shy away from statewide restrictions generally and instead gave local governments like St. Louis County the ability to implement them. It's obviously, we can play Monday morning quarterback on COVID-19 till the end of time, but do you think that was a mistake for the governor to do that?
Well, you know, I don't think that anyone could have foreseen that that would translate to an acting director of health essentially creating 400 pages of law without any oversight, any accountability, any opportunity for public comment. So, you know, hindsight's 2020. I know it's really hard to criticize just when you had to make those decisions with information that was known at the time. My hope is that if something like this were to happen again, that, you know, different decisions would have been made.
You know, it's really been interesting to see how public opinion has shifted on restrictions. And I'll be transparent. I think at the beginning of the pandemic, I was very probably more for restrictions than maybe I am now, because vaccines have come about and there's been a lot more research about like what the effect of COVID-19 is. I mean, I live in Richmond Heights, which is a pretty like restriction favorable area, but I've seen fewer and fewer people wear masks, say, at the grocery store. What has been kind of your perception about how public opinion has drifted on this issue of restrictions?
Well, you know, unfortunately, an important part of preserving public health is maintaining that trust between the public health officials and those they are meant to represent. And there is just been so much damage done to that trust. And the perfect examples are right here in the St. Louis area. We saw not only were decisions being made that contradicted statements made by the county executive and pandemic task force leader in the weeks prior, but you had other issues that really distracted away. You saw with Khan, when he made the accusations about the racist mob that shoulder bumped him, and he ended up flipping off one of the St. Louis County constituents that was in the area. We ended up seeing afterwards that that was completely false. There was video footage of him leaving the chambers all the way down to the parking lot, yet he went on national news and went out and pretty much bashed the people of St. Louis County that were in that group. Things like that are very destructive to people's trust. And if you think the best way out of the pandemic was to get people to buy in to taking this vaccine, then that is the absolute last thing that you should want.
So why did you end up deciding to run for the Missouri Senate?
Well, you know, in the time that followed that press conference, I began getting much more engaged, traveling to the Capitol, testifying at committee hearings in the House and the Senate. And, you know, the first attempt to get legislation passed that would rein some of these orders in, restore oversight to that process, failed. And I traveled there and I met with some of the senators that voted against it. And just the responses I was getting as far as why they voted that way, just it really just didn't sit too well with me. That was the first time I really realized that some of these legislators might not always vote based on just the specifics of the policy. There were a lot of personal things involved also, who was involved in the bill, and it didn't seem right to me. And I wanted to get involved and just try to do a better job and get real substantial things done for the people of our state.
You ran against four other candidates, including a prominent businessman and a state representative. Why do you think you ended up winning?
Well, I think that my message really resonated well. A lot of people, generally when you have a candidate, you only have their words to go off of, and you don't really know whether they're going to follow through once they're in office. I think that what was different with me is that people were able to see a two-year history of taking action, getting results. And so my words weren't just words. They were backed up by things that I've already done. I've gotten real deliverables for people. I've gone out there and taken big hits personally, put my neck out there to fight for people's liberties, because that's what I believed in. And I think that was what really stood out to people.
You're not necessarily a political neophyte, but was there anything about this campaign that surprised you?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, I'm not new enough and naive enough to politics to know that, you know, sometimes things aren't twisted a little here and there, but it's a little different once, you know, you get the attack ads coming out and you're hearing your name on the radio and getting mail in your mailbox every day. And just, yeah, it got pretty,
Did you get negative mail about yourself to your house?
Oh yeah, I did.
What was that like?
It was interesting. You know, at first you kind of laugh it off. The first one I got was my face superimposed on a puppet, and I showed it to my wife, and I don't think I heard her crack up that loud in a while. And then
what were you a puppet of?
A puppet of what did it say? A puppet of special interests, just obscure special interests.
Okay.
It's, and yeah, it's So it was interesting. There was something about how I didn't pay my taxes or something, and about how I had multiple criminal offenses. I mean, anyone can go on CaseNet and see the only thing I have on my record are a couple minor driving
things. I was going to say, was it like speeding tickets or something like that?
Yeah, I think I have one speeding ticket from when I was a teenager and then another one for staying in the left lane too long. But then they went from that in the radio ad saying, he's been in fights, he's been in courtroom conflicts. Well, I was a professional mixed martial artist, so technically I have been in fights. They just, didn't mention the fact that they were professional sanctioned bouts.
How do you campaign for a seat like this, especially since the vast majority of the district is rural, which makes going door-to-door a lot more difficult than, say, the 2nd District?
It does, but I wasn't about to let that stop me. And I mentioned that I was a former professional mixed martial artist. I went into the restaurant business. So either I like taking on difficult challenges or I'm just a glutton for punishment, I guess. But I just did the same things, the same blueprint I used that led to success in my athletic career in wrestling, mixed martial arts, and then business. I go out there and I outwork my opponents 10-1. Back in my wrestling days, it was after practice when I knew were resting. I'd go out and put on the headphones with the Rocky soundtrack and go run an extra 5 miles. Now it's just going out there and knocking doors in 105 degree heat till 8 p.m. The one thing I knew I could control is that I could outwork my opponents and outwork them by a lot, and that's exactly what I did.
So you're facing John Keane in the general election, a Democrat, who apparently has played at your restaurant before, according to the Washington Missourian.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that until I had the opportunity to speak with him at a couple of the more recent candidate forums, and he filled me in on that apparently he had played in a band a few times at my restaurant.
So we're going to probably have him on the podcast at some point because I think it's important for people to hear from both sides. But even he would probably admit that he's the severe underdog in this race. This district is very Republican. But I think the interesting thing is, like, he probably should, like, work hard because, in my opinion, the only way for Democrats to win the 2nd congressional district in the future, which includes all of Franklin County, is they need to start building organization and inroads in Franklin County. Otherwise, they're going to lose every race, in my opinion. So what do you kind of think about how the general election is going to go with that, like, long-term political reality as a backdrop?
You know, I think that you have a good point. You have to, if the Democrats want a future out there, and the last thing I want to do is give the Democrats in Franklin County advice, but, they have to have people that are engaged. And, I mean, that's huge for both parties in different areas. I mean, same here for the St. Louis area with the Republicans. And, the best way to do that, we'll see. I don't know what his strategy is for this campaign, but I think just the fact that he ran in the first place is probably a positive that somebody at least is on the ballot, because that's not the case everywhere.
We'll be right back after this quick break with Ben Brown, the Republican nominee for the 26th Senatorial District.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.
And we're back on Politically Speaking with Ben Brown. He is the Republican nominee for the 26th Senatorial District, which, by the way, includes a small part of St. Louis County, all of Franklin County, all of Osage County, all of Warren County, and all of Gasconade County. Did I get that right, first of all?
Yeah. I got the St. Louis County portion, Franklin, Warren, Gasconade, Osage. All right. A lot of ground.
So, Sarah, I'm going to let you handle the next few questions about the disbandment. Is that a word? Disbandment?
I've been saying disbandment, disillusion, ending.
Vanishing
probably,
of the conservative
probably
caucus.
Probably not that. They did end on their own terms. So, yes.
So you did a story on that, so I'm going to let you handle the questions on
I
that.
Did. So the conservative caucus announced its disillusion earlier this week. What do you make of that decision?
I think it was for the best. I consider myself conservative, and I was going to I want to go to Jefferson City to pursue conservative reforms regardless. though, I mean, everyone can see that the labels, you know, conservative caucus or what they want to call it, the moderate caucus, the Rowden caucus, those have become a distraction. And anytime the conversation's moving to these battles between the different sides and moving away from the actual policy, I see that as negative. So I think that you know, this olive branch, whether, you know, despite how it might be received by some, I think that this is what we needed to see. You know, whether it makes a difference in the long run or not, you know, we don't really know. But the one thing we know is that all I've seen so far is continued escalation. This is the first thing I've seen that really symbolizes an attempt to de-escalate. And it's my hope that you know, Republicans can take this as an opportunity to really come together, because I know there is an awful lot of common ground there if we're just willing to look for it.
Well, and I know this is kind of a moot point now, but, you know, if you were to win your election in November, you know, would you have joined the caucus?
You know, I've been asked that so many times.
I'm sure.
the thing that is frustrating to me is that I don't want to be defined by a label, whether the conservative caucus was going to remain intact or not. Because people, whether if I were to say I was going to join the conservative caucus, there are people that automatically are going to make assumptions as far as what that means, who's going to be, you know, controlling me or who I'm going to align with. And that's never been the case, whether I was going to join it or not. I'm going there to be my own independent person. Anyone that's seen anything I've done over the last 2 years knows that I'm somebody that takes pride in the fact that they get results. And that's exactly what I have always intended to do once I go there. So, you know, I am happy that I probably won't be asked that question as much anymore, because I don't want that to be something that defines me. And regardless, I'm going to always do what I believe in my heart is right. And whether that means aligning with someone that considers himself a member of the conservative caucus or someone else, that doesn't really matter to me. I'm there to pass conservative reforms and do the work for the people of Missouri.
Former caucus member Senator Bill Igel actually spoke on kind of the results of the August 2nd primary, and I think we have a clip of that.
We feel like we have effectively a mandate from the Republican electorate that was overwhelmingly supportive of candidates that had precisely the same kind of message that the conservative caucus was talking about for the past 4 years.
So do you agree with that statement? And if so, kind of why disband? Why extend this olive branch?
Well, I agree that I believe it isn't a mandate as far as showing support for conservative policies. Whether, you know, I don't know that people went to the ballot box, that how many people even knew what the conservative caucus was and who was a member of that. But I think it does reinforce the desire for Missouri. You know, we're a red state, and we want to see a lot of these reforms that we're seeing in other states that have less of a Republican majority.
So do you feel like now that congressional redistricting is over, there can be more of a focus on some of the conservative caucus's priorities? And if so, what are those priorities?
Yeah, I think that redistricting, it sucked a lot of oxygen out of the room. It caused a lot of issues. And I think that really exacerbated the existing conflict that was there between, you know, what some would call the conservative caucus wing of the party and people that you might refer to as more moderate. I think that just deepened that divide. My hope is that without that being on our plate, that we'll be able to, you know, it will take pressure off and allow more time and room to pursue these other conservative goals.
So what are some of those goals? Like what would be some things that you would want to actually see passed in 2023?
Well, here in Missouri, you know, with a Republican supermajority on paper, you know, the fact that our growth is stagnant is something that really bothers me. And, you know, being a small business owner coming from that background, there's a lot more that we can be doing. I mean, particularly, you know, I just don't have experience as a small business owner building a business, but I think the experience just specifically in the last couple years is important, because trying to navigate all the hurdles a small business owner has to go to in today's day and age is a lot different than it might have looked like just a couple years ago. And so I think that we need to be doing everything we can to cultivate an economic environment where small businesses can grow and thrive. I think that there's a lot we can do as far as licensing regulation reform, a lot of redundancies and just extra bloat and obstacles that small business owners just really don't need to be dealing with, on top of record inflation, price fluctuations, and everything else that we're dealing with today.
So you will not be in the legislature when and if Governor Mike Parson calls a special session on tax cuts and agriculture tax credits. But I am interested in kind of what you would want to see there, because first of all, like, tax cuts will certainly affect businesses, but your district is overwhelmingly rural. So I think that the agriculture tax credit issue is actually pretty important for the 26th district. What's kind of your thoughts about how that should go?
Well, I mean, as far as cutting taxes, I think that that's something we certainly need to pursue. And you just see how much our budget's grown in just the last 10 years. I believe it was from around $20 billion to $47 billion. And I think that there's just a lot more that we can be doing for the taxpayer. You have tens of millions of dollars in various agency positions that go unfilled. You could go on and on. There's just, we need to have a little more accountability with our government, and specifically with how our tax dollars are being spent. You know, I think that regarding agriculture, there's a lot we need to be doing. They're facing a lot of unique challenges too. They're dealing with inflation, but specifically the price of feed and fertilizer has gone up. That's really, really taking a big bite in some of those profit margins. You know, in our state, the average age of a farmer is 58 years old. That's going to be a problem. We got to do something to attract and maintain young families, keep them in these rural areas. You know, there's just a lot of things we need to do. As far as, you know, the tax credit specifically, you know, like any bill, I don't want to state I'm all in for support or opposition until you read the fine lines, because often people make their assumptions just based on the headline without looking at the detail. And I believe the devil's in the details, and you got to understand the full implications of any policy.
You bring up an interesting point, and it's something that I've been wondering myself. When I travel, especially in Southeast Missouri, I particularly go for the state parks, which are some of the most beautiful in the world. There's also some great state parks in Franklin County as well. But one of the things you notice is, like, the more and more rural it gets, you go to some of these small towns, which used to have 10, 20,000 people, now have like 5. There really isn't a lot of vibrancy in some of the rural parts of the state. Now, obviously, Franklin County has been kind of growing pretty steadily because it's kind of like this mixture of suburban, rural manufacturing. But I don't know, what are about the rest of the counties in your district? Are they having some of those same issues of keeping younger people there and economic growth being, let me rephrase that. Are some of the more rural counties having the issues that some of those counties in Southeast Missouri having, and as far as economic growth and keeping people there? And if so, like, what should be done to reverse that trend?
So, I mean, it depends. We have such a large geographical area within our district. It does vary a little bit. You know, like, places like Warren County are doing really, really well with economic development. They're showing a lot of growth, you know, right city area, other areas. And, you know, for the biggest thing for them is just having the infrastructure to keep up with that growth. Other areas, you know, I haven't heard as much direct concerns about population leaving areas in Gasconade and Osage County, but they're dealing with a lot of the same issues that other places are with inflation and everything else.
It seems that inflation is something that is a really big problem everywhere, but I don't know what state government can do to combat it. Is there anything that state government can do with inflation, or is that just a real federal responsibility?
Well, yes and no. I mean, there's certain things that are going to happen at the federal level regardless that are going to be outside our control in the state legislature. But you've seen that, you know, the federal government's not the only one that has a bit of a spending problem. I think that at the state level, too, that the spending could be reined in a little bit. And we certainly don't need to be doing anything to contribute to the issues that we're already seeing.
So I want to move on to the upcoming election. So you introduced Attorney General Schmidt before one of his last events in Washington, Missouri. Why did you decide to back him over the other major contenders in the race?
Well, it wasn't the first time that I had introduced him actually at a rally. You know, I think that Eric and I, we've both been involved in some of similar battles. You know, he was involved with taking on a lot of the mandates in St. Louis, and I think that his campaign was probably the most similar to mine out of any other one in the state that I could think of. I think we both stood for a lot of the same things, and yeah, it just kind of seemed like a natural fit for me. You know, when we were really struggling, you know, not just people in St. Louis County, but throughout the entire area, there were very few elected officials that were there to support us. You know, there were a number of people in the state legislature that were, but by and large part, a lot of them didn't want to touch the issue, especially early on. But Attorney General Schmidt was willing to take those on, and that made an impact for me, just his willingness to fight for a lot of the same things I was out there fighting for every day.
How do you feel that he fares against Trudy Bush Valentine?
I mean, you'd have to imagine that he would be a pretty heavy favorite. You know, I don't know that I have enough knowledge about these sort of things to know how much the independent candidate will come into play.
John Wood, who we had on the podcast recently, but continue.
But, you know, barring any larger than expected impact from him, I think that Eric's got to feel pretty good about his chances.
There's been some conjecture, primarily from Democrats, that the demise of Roe versus Wade is going to energize Democratic voters, especially female voters. What do you think about that?
You know, it's possible. You know, whether it's enough to make a real impact on this race, you know, I don't believe it will to actually sway the election, but I guess we'll have to see.
When you were going door to door, what were people's opinions about, you know, basically most abortions being banned in Missouri? Like, I've heard, let me back up for a second. I think that there's general sentiment in Missouri, especially the more rural you get, that abortion is wrong. But I think that there's also kind of a feeling that banning abortions in most circumstances, including instances where the person gets pregnant because of rape or incest, is just a bridge too far. Like, what were you hearing from people when you were going door to door?
It varied to an extent. I mean, some people were absolutely thrilled about it. Others, you know, they weren't thrilled about the extent of the policy that was going into place. I think that what really meant a lot to people is that even people that I might have disagreed with on some level, I showed that I was willing to listen and show an attempt to have some kind of understanding with their point of view. I think that that's really important. I think that's something that's been missing from the legislative process in our state. And I think that's one thing I hope that sets me apart from other legislators, that I'm always going to have that willingness and openness to listen to somebody and hear them out, even if I might disagree.
And what is kind of your position on abortion rights in Missouri? Do you agree with the trigger law that banned it except for medical emergencies? Or will it be willing to talk about some further exceptions, including rape or incest exceptions?
I mean, I'm always willing to have a conversation, but what I believe in my heart is right is the way the law has now, that it's going to be banned, except in the case of the medical emergencies.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the program. If you do win, we'll be having you back to talk about policy that's more specific. Politically Speaking is a product of St. Louis Public Radio, which is part of the University of Missouri St. Louis. You can follow all of our stories at stlpr.org. You can follow me on Twitter at Jay Rosenbaum. Sarah, how can people follow you on Twitter?
That's Sarah K. Kellogg, 2 L's, 2 G's.
And how could people either follow you on Twitter or any other parts of the internet where you want to be found?
Well, on Twitter, you can find me at Ben Brown Tweets. We also have a website, benbrownforsenate.com, and all of our social media, Facebook, Twitter, at Ben Brown for Missouri.
Thank you very much. Until next time, so long.